I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Sri Shad Goswami Prabhu Ki. So today we're going on to chapter 25, Devotees of Krishna, page 203 in your Nectar of Devotion, and page 27, I think, 27 in the overview book. We have been discussing Krishna as a vibhava, as a stimulant of ecstasy. We're still, that means as an alambana, so, or basic vibhava. Chapter 25 is the last chapter dealing with alambanas, the basic sources or stimulants of ecstasy. And it is discussing the devotees as vibhavas. The point is, and Prabhupada makes the point in the first paragraph in chapter 25, Srila Rupa Goswami says that all the transcendental qualities discussed previously are also found in the devotees of Krishna. They have all those qualities, well, not exactly all, but 55. Someone said 55. Who was that? That was you. Actually, we'll find at the end of this chapter, they have 55. Some. Not all, some. Some or many have 50, but then some have 55. Anyway, we'll come to that shortly at the end of this chapter. So now, the devotees as vibhavas, they are ashrayas. They are the reservoirs of love. And they express that love to Krishna, and he enjoys it. Now, of course, one point which is not really discussed here in Nectar of Devotion is that these positions are interchangeable. I was just reading a little bit from Jiva Dharma earlier today, and where they are discussing exactly these subjects here in exactly the same terms. In fact, precisely the same terms. But then, when it comes to this point, we get to this point about vibhavas, alambanas, Krishna and the devotees, Krishna as being the enjoyer of the love, and the devotees as being the ones who have the love and express the love and are stimulated to express the love. So the point comes up that sometimes Krishna is the reservoir of love, and the devotees receive Krishna's affection. A very obvious example of that is Krishna in the Battle of Kurukshetra, driving the chariot of Arjuna, serving his devotee, trying to please and help his devotee. So sometimes it's like that. So the element of flexibility is there. Anyway, in this context, we're talking about the devotees as being stimuli for ecstatic love. In order for devotees to really stimulate someone in terms of ecstatic love, the devotees have to be quite advanced. A less advanced devotee, or what would you say, a regular devotee or something like that, may also stimulate devotees, other devotees, but not stimulate them to the point that they actually experience that ecstasy. So, therefore, here we find in this chapter, when the devotees are discussed as being vibhavas, as being things or people who stimulate ecstasy, bhava, in others, then, or even in themselves for that matter, as we said, it's kind of flexible. Stimulate others, stimulate themselves. It's a matter of stimulation, one way or another. So, the discussion is about that there are two categories of devotees who may stimulate like this. One category are the sadhakas, the practicing devotees. The other category is the siddhas, the perfect devotees. So the siddhas, obviously, they're perfect anyway, so they're on the topmost levels of devotional service. But the sadhakas, what does it mean, the sadhakas? Well, according to the description here, the type of sadhaka who may stimulate this ecstasy is a very elevated sadhaka, actually. That is there at the beginning of the second paragraph. It's in our overview book. We have here point one, the sadhaka as vibhava, and we make the point, this refers to very advanced sadhakas. They are able to arouse ecstasy in those who they associate with. So Prabhupada says, Rupa Goswami says also, actually. In fact, is coming directly from Rupa Goswami. A person who has attained attraction for Krishna and who is not freed from the material impasse, but who has qualified himself to enter into the kingdom of God. In this context, such a person is called a sadhaka. Now, this is a very interesting mixture of characteristics, isn't it? It's a very intriguing mixture. They are qualified to enter the kingdom of God. That means they're pretty qualified. They have attained attraction for Krishna. Not just like they like him a bit and they don't mind chanting their rounds or, you know, something like that. But they are really attracted to Krishna in a very profound and deep sense. But they're not free from the material impasse. There are still some problems there. So in this context, such a person we are referring to as sadhaka. Not just anyone. I mean, not just any devotee, like neophyte devotee who just got initiated or something like that. Now, the specific details, what he's really getting at, are brought out very nicely in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discusses this actual verse, which we just read, and he explains it. So let me read what he says. There are those whose attachment to Krishna has reached the stage of bhava, but whose service is not totally free from interruption or impediment, although they're qualified to meet Krishna face to face. They're referred to as sadhaka bhaktas, devotees in the stage of practice. In other words, this is exactly the same statement, exactly the same verse. So then he says, thus, within the sadhaka bhakta, this symptom is seen, that though his attachment has reached the stage of bhava bhakti, even after the appearance of bhava bhakti, impediments have not fully ceased. In light of this attribute, it can be understood that within the sadhaka bhakta, at least some portion of the prevalent tendency to commit serious offenses is remaining. And there are a few examples there. At least one we're very well aware of is Maharaj Bharat. He was on the level of bhava, but he still had not passed or succeeded in, was not free from the material impasse. In fact, he fell a victim to it. Jiva Goswami describes in Bhakti Sandarbha that Maharaj Bharat, he had two problems. One was that there was stored up within him, there was this reaction to some previous serious nam aparad. That was there. Another thing was that when he left home, even though he was so advanced, and in fact, we read about that, didn't we, earlier on, how he left home, he left home in such an amazing way that it is cited as being an example of someone on the level of bhava, how they may leave home and how detached they may be from their home and so on. So anyway, despite that, when Bharat Maharaj left home, he made a mistake. Instead of going to live with devotees, he went on his own. And Jiva Goswami explains that if he had been with other devotees, then when that deer came, the other devotees could have told him, no, don't get so involved with this deer. And they could have saved him. He could have gone back to Godhead. But because he was on his own, he didn't have the protection of the association of devotees, somehow it just didn't occur to him, and he got deviated. Now, this person, we have earlier said that on the level of bhava bhakti, one is beyond sadhana bhakti. But now here, someone who's on the level of bhava bhakti is being referred to as a sadhaka, or someone who is performing sadhana bhakti. So what is going on here? What does it really mean? Now, this is talking about someone who is sort of in between. Some touch of bhava is there. A little touch of bhava is there. So because it is there, then they must be accepted as being on the platform of bhava bhakti. But they have not become solidly positioned on the level of bhava. So therefore, there are still traces. Not just traces, but they are still also, to some degree, involved in sadhana bhakti. And therefore, some contaminations are still there. Yeah, so it is this type of devotee who is being described here. Now, to make it a little more clear, in the same second paragraph on page 203, Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami, they refer to one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam which will describe the characteristics of the type of devotee that we're talking about here as a sadhaka. This is 11.2.46. If you're familiar with that part of the Bhagavatam, you'll know there that somebody, who is it? Anyway, one of the sages is explaining to the king about different levels of devotees. And this verse is talking about the Madhyam Adhikaris, not the Uttama Adhikaris. Back in chapter 17, those of you who have taken the course on the eastern side of the ocean, you would know that one of the first things that Prabhupada says in chapter 17, which is the first chapter about bhava bhakti, is that on the level of bhava bhakti, the devotee is an uttama adhikari. But now here, a verse is being given to us, which is actually the classic verse. It is the classic verse from Shastra describing the Madhyam Adhikari. So it is talking about a very high level Madhyam Adhikari. Very high level. Who's like really borderline, actually. And there is a touch of bhava there. So we can say, yes, here we have someone on the level of bhava bhakti, but still they're kind of in between, so therefore they can be referred to as sadhakas, practicing devotees, and they're like first-class examples of Madhyam Adhikaris, very advanced Madhyam Adhikaris. And then the characteristics of the sadhaka are described further in the next paragraph, and here we see even more clearly, it really is an advanced sadhaka, not your average devotee who's really just practicing devotional service. When one is found shedding tears by hearing of the pastimes of the Lord, it is to be understood that the blazing fire of material existence will be extinguished by such watering. When there is shivering of the body and the hairs of the body stand up, it is to be understood that the devotee is nearing perfection. An example of a sadhaka cultivating devotional service is Bilva Mangal Thakur. In other words, this is a sadhaka, the type of sadhaka, very advanced. Now, they are distinct, though, from those who are perfect. And this is described right at the bottom of page 203. When a devotee is never tired of executing devotional service and is always engaged in Krishna conscious activities, constantly relishing the transcendental mellows in relationship with Krishna, he is called perfect. So now this is the siddhas. So, now, what is described now, really, for the rest of the chapter, sort of the trickiest thing is this bit about grasping what the sadhaka is in this context. In fact, I think it's in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu, or maybe it's in Jiva Dharma, I forget exactly. I was just reading today, though. It's in one of the two books. In this context, in the context of this specific discussion, there it is said that someone who is not on this level, in this context, someone who is not on this level is not really to be accepted as a sadhaka. They're not really practicing sadhana bhakti. It's sort of like pre-sadhana bhakti. Now, this is a very kind of specific application of the concept of sadhana bhakti. You know, you'll get different applications of what is sadhana bhakti and what isn't. You know, we of course we accept that anyone, like any one of us sitting here, any quote unquote regular devotee in ISKCON is practicing sadhana bhakti. But in terms of this, you know, it's like a very narrow and very specific application of the concept of a sadhaka, then they would be considered like pre-sadhaka. Although Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes the point, interesting point, that still they can be considered devotees, even though real devotion may not be there, because real devotion means bhava, at least bhava. But still, just like a person who's preparing for a fire sacrifice, goes and collects wood and various ingredients, and is therefore considered to be taking part in the fire sacrifice, even though they are not actually in the fire sacrifice as such. So in this very narrow context, devotees who, you know, in a more general sense we would accept as being engaged in sadhana bhakti, they're engaged in sadhana bhakti. And certainly Prabhupada, obviously and very clearly and more or less exclusively applied the context of sadhana bhakti in that context. So anyway, the rest of the chapter is fairly general, really. And I don't think that many of us would find much information in the rest of the chapter which we're not already quite familiar with. A lot of it is to do with those who are perfect. Those who are perfect naturally stimulate others in devotional service, so they act as vibhavas. They naturally are stimulated themselves in devotional service. It's relatively straightforward. There are two categories of perfect devotee. They're nitya siddhas, those who are eternally perfect. And there are those who are called samprapta siddha, those who have become perfect. There are two categories of those who have become perfect. No real prizes for guessing what they are, but can one of the men tell us one of those two categories of those who became perfect? They were not, but they became. Kripa Siddha, all right. One of the Mataji's, the other category? Sadhana Siddha. So we're aware of these categories. Kripa Siddhas, they became perfect by mercy. Over on page 28 of our overview book, it's discussed pretty clearly. It's sort of relatively straightforward. There's an example given by Lord Brahma in the Bhagavatam, talking about people who are promoted to the kingdom of God. And you can tell that they're promoted because they're just so ecstatic. Promoted means previously they were demoted or, you know, whatever. They were back on the material platform. But now they've been promoted. They cultivated their sadhana. They performed sadhana bhakti so nicely, they got promoted. And you can see their qualifications. They're so ecstatic. And then the example is given of Markandeya Rishi. In Nectar of Devotion, this is on page 204. Then there are those who are Kripa Siddha. Examples are given. This is on now, page 205, bottom of 204 actually, and top of page 205. The wives of the Brahmins. They were not really engaged in sadhana bhakti. They were housewives and they had these kind of snooty, smarter Brahmin husbands. And, you know, we can imagine they looked on their wives in kind of snooty, smarter Brahmin ways. And so, you know, there are these wives who are probably not being taken so extremely seriously, as sadhakas or potential sadhakas, but then they get exposed to Krishna and they just become overwhelmed, and they become so stimulated by Krishna, they're prepared to give up their husbands, actually, and just serve Krishna. And Krishna's very merciful to them, so they came to the level of perfection. And then finally, at the end, their snooty, smarter Brahmin husbands even appreciated them and said, actually, we can see they've become perfect. So then the Brahmin said, to hell with our ritualistic sacrifices and all our rules and regulations. What good have they done us? Look at our wives. Look at our wives. They have become so advanced. They have become perfect. So that was by the mercy of Krishna. And then Shukadev Goswami on page 205. So he also got some mercy and became perfect. Bali Maharaj is a creeper siddha.
Okay.
Well, I mean, there's a context there. Those of you who are familiar with that pastime. He got some mercy. He's a special case. Creeper siddhas are definitely special cases. Then there's the Nitya Siddhas, the eternally perfect. They're very special persons. If we look, it's in our overview book right at the bottom of page 28. They are Satyabhama. No, Krishna tells Satyabhama that I've descended with my eternal associates. You shouldn't consider that my associates are ever separated from me. They are my personal expansions. These Nitya Siddhas, they're very special people. And as such, you must know that they're almost as powerful as I am. Yeah. There are a number of statements by Krishna in different scriptures in which Krishna makes this sort of point, that the Nitya Siddhas, my eternal associates, they are almost as powerful as me. There are even a few statements where he says they are as powerful as me. So, these Nitya Siddhas are very special, very, very special persons who descend with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I think, let's see, right down the bottom of page 206, last point I'll just touch on here. It is described that Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa, has 64 transcendental qualities, and all of the ever-liberated souls who accompany the Lord have the first 55 of the qualities without any doubt. Not just 50. The 50, that normally applies to jiva souls. 55 is possible for those Nitya Siddhas who are part of the internal potency. They're not jiva souls. So they are therefore, because they're part of the internal potency, like Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, and many of the very intimate and very, very close, constant associates of Krishna, they're not jiva souls. They're part of the internal potency. They're not marginal. They cannot fall down, even if they want to. You know? Well, I don't know if they really wanted to, maybe. But I don't think that is just a consideration. But they are just part of the internal potency. They do not have marginal tendencies. So they are directly in a sense, directly part of the nature of the Lord, in a more direct sense than we are part of the nature of the Lord. So therefore they can have those 55 qualities. Yeah, not just the 50. Any comments or questions on this? Not necessarily. It can also include jiva souls, but you know, it's more particularly for those who are like part of the internal potency and really eternal associates of the Lord, constant associates, like the main residents of Vrindavan, the main residents of Dwarka. And when Prabhupada is describing here, then you'll see the examples given are generally of that type of person as being Nityasiddha. But I don't know if you noticed it. I don't know if you are reading these things before we have our class. How many of you have read through chapter 25 in the last 24 or 48 hours? Okay. So did you notice one statement here which is like in a different vein about the Nityasiddhas? Did you notice that? I mean, it's a really remarkable statement. It's on page 205, the last sentence of the second to last paragraph. Anyone who becomes exhilarated by hearing of the pastimes of Lord Krishna when he was present on this earth with his associates is to be understood as Nityasiddha, eternally perfect. So there, you know, it's like a broader understanding of what is a Nityasiddha. Although generally you'll see that the way Nityasiddhas are being presented here, it's more like they're the real eternal constant associates, you know, who descend with the Lord and so on and so forth. The cowherd people, the yadus, people like this. Anyway, the point there is, though, anyone who becomes exhilarated, you know, exhilarated means really excited, when they hear about the Lord's pastimes, so they can be accepted as being perfect. And Prabhupada a little bit talked about this, that when you become perfect, when you come to the spiritual platform, then of course the spiritual platform is eternal. There's nothing which is really temporary on the spiritual platform. So once you come to the spiritual platform, in a certain sense you can be considered to be eternally on the spiritual platform. So it's in that type of context that the term Nityasiddha is being applied here in this statement. That someone who becomes exhilarated, in other words, comes to the level of pure ecstasy when they hear about Krishna, in other words, they're completely liberated, totally on the transcendental platform, hearing about Krishna, then in a certain sense we say that's eternal. It's not temporary. Then even though they may have been in sadhana bhakti a little while ago, but still in a certain context you can say, oh, Nityasiddha. Yeah, because they're on the eternal platform now. It's not that temporary material platform. That's a particular kind of understanding of this term Nityasiddha. Otherwise it means the eternal associates. We're just always with the Lord. That was, yeah, the first mistake. Which was like the first sort of manifestation of that offense, you know, the result of that offense. Yeah, maybe. But, you know, Prabhupada would not travel alone. When he had to, when there were special circumstances or like, in the very early days, of course, he did. But then he didn't travel alone. And he said that he was not traveling alone to set an example for his own protection. Of course, he didn't need to be protected. So, anyway, devotees for devotees, association is very, very important. And even for sannyasis, you know, and it's in like an impersonal context, then maybe the sannyasis would just isolate themselves altogether. But the Vaishnav sannyasis, they relish being with other devotees, and they're always trying to be with other devotees. Yeah. So that's sort of like a higher principle than this other principle of just being, you know, on your own, going on your own. No, I didn't mean that type of position. I meant ashraya and vishaya. And we'll go on further, we'll see anubhav, sattvikabhav, vyabhichari. Sometimes one can become the other, and, you know, they can be kind of interchangeable to some degree. So generally Krishna's the Vishaya. He enjoys being loved, and the devotees love him. But sometimes Krishna loves the devotees, and the devotees enjoy being loved by Krishna. That also happens. So there's certainly some element of interchangeability in the positions. See, they sometimes expand themselves. And, you know, when Krishna had his pastimes here, then Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda were here, but they also accommodated Drona and Dara, some demigods, who were learning to become, they had become more or less perfect. Now they're entering into Krishna's pastimes in this world just before going to Goloka. So they were to learn how to be parental devotees. So in a very transcendental way, they shared the bodies of Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. But it is not just that Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda were just Drona and Dara and were not Nanda Maharaj. And the same with Uddhava. One Vasu shared his body. Yeah, to learn that particular position, type of position. Yeah. Well, I mean, no, actually. In fact, Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha specifically says that we don't know what it was. But it was, he says, if I remember correctly, it was from the previous lifetime, and it was serious, but we don't know what it was. But because he was on the level of bhava, and that means beyond just the ordinary influence of maya, then we can understand it could only have been that. Drona and Dara, they were two demigods. It's there, it's in the Bhagavatam. It's in the Bhagavatam. Drona and Dara, they were two, not Dronacharya, another Drona. Some Drona, they were demigods, and they became very advanced, and, you know, to the point where they could, like, be candidates for going back to Goloka Vrindavan and becoming parental devotees. So, you're probably aware, Prabhupada on a few occasions said that devotees, when they come to that point, they then take one more birth in this world. And that is, yeah, within the Bhoma Lila, within the earthly pastimes of Krishna. And there they associate with him, and they become like complete in their qualification. So Drona and Dara, they were demigods. They became very qualified. So then they shared the bodies of Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda. And they learnt in that way. I mean, that's a very transcendental consideration. Sharing someone's body. Someone like Nanda Maharaj. But this is how it worked, and how it works sometimes. Others of them, like we were mentioning the other day in Bhagavatam class, some of those Munichari gopis, who were previously, or anyway, they were in Dandakaranya forests, that group. Some of them, they were very attracted, but they were not on the level of prema, they were on the level of bhava. Still, they got to enter Krishna's pastimes. They still got to enter the pastimes. And then they actually advanced, you know, through, particularly going through this torturous experience that Krishna is playing his flute, calling the gopis, but they couldn't come. They were stopped, but they were hankering so much, then they became completely perfect. Like that, basically. It means on the pure platform. Yeah, and senses pure means the spiritual body. It's like 325.25, if you're familiar with that, Satam Prasangam, Mamavirya Samvara, how the devotees hear and discuss with other devotees, and they relish it, and then they advance, then they become fixed, and then, what is it, real devotion and devotional service begin. Then, real devotion and devotional service begin. See, now this is, in the narrow context, that devotional service means that there is devotion. What is that devotion? It means it's a manifestation of the internal potency. That's what it is. Because that is what love of God is. That's what bhava is. It is the internal potency. It's not just you and me, you know, sort of struggling to do a bit of service here and there. So in a very narrow context, real devotion and real devotional service means on the level of bhava. And therefore, this devotee who's so elevated, described at the beginning of this chapter, he can be considered a sadhaka in that context. He's practicing. Yes, yeah, spiritual body. Prabhupada gives the example of the ripening of a coconut, that the flesh or whatever is there inside. In other words, the spiritual body is inside already, even in the immature stage, like today. But then as the coconut ripens, then that flesh, which in the unripe state, is merged with the rest of the coconut. So our spiritual body is kind of merged without the rest of our condition. But as one becomes purified, as the coconut ripens, then that flesh starts to separate until it actually becomes separate. It gradually separates. And when it is separate, then you can shake it and you hear it rattling. There's a separate entity inside. So that is the spiritual body, which is manifest generally on the level of bhava. Yes. This type of sadhaka described here seems to be on the level of asakti, entering bhava, somewhere in between asakti and bhava. You missed the earlier days of the course. We read a number of things from Prabhupada even, where he says that on the level of asakti, one becomes clearly aware of one's eternal relationship with Krishna. Yeah. Okay. Any other comment or question? Yes? Kripa. Well, it says here that the Dvijapatnis got it from Krishna. They got it from Krishna. This is one of the ways of coming to bhava or prema. Special mercy, and it can be the special mercy of Krishna himself. So in the case of the Dvijapatnis, it was directly the special mercy of Krishna. In the case of Shukadev, well, he was Brahman realized, wasn't he? Then he didn't want to come out of his mother's womb for 16 years. And his father, Vyasadeva, was trying to convince him. But Shukadev kept saying, "No, no, it's your wife. She's pressurizing you, I know. That's why you want me to come out. But I'm quite happy here, thanks." So then they called Krishna. They called Krishna, and then Shukadev came out. So somewhere around that time, Shukadev became perfect in Krishna consciousness. And in that context, he can be considered a Kripa Siddha. Sounds like he got the mercy of Krishna. Maybe he got a bit of mercy from Vyas also. But it doesn't say specifically here. Well, it does. Shukadev and the wives of the Brahmins performing yajna are vivid examples of devotees who achieved the perfectional stage of devotional service by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Shukadev, he got Krishna's mercy, and then he became perfect. Shukadev, he was an impersonalist. The wives of the Brahmins, we don't know. Okay, tomorrow we'll do chapter 26. So read through it. It's very interesting. It's about Udipan, change, partial change of subject. Things which stimulate one to become ecstatic. Not Krishna and not so much the devotees. Well, anyway, it is Krishna also. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.